Welcome into another edition of Football 52, the All Things UNC and Football in General podcast with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb and myself, Brady Hull, episode number 20. This is, I don't know why, but this one was significant. This is one of those benchmarks, coach, maybe one of those red letter podcast type shows, or gold letter, as we're saying it with the Bears, gold letter podcast day.
Round number 20.
We're
moving.
Seems right,
moving towards, and I guess what would be 26 would be halfway through the year.
We'll be there before you know it. Yeah. Here we are, June 19th, as we record this, and I remember when we started this bad boy. We're in the snow; it's cold, and now we're dealing with the hot sun and everything. But it also means that the warmer it gets, also means the closer we're getting to actual fall football. Cannot wait for that day. And I think this podcast has helped us build up a lot of excitement, getting a lot of messages from folks every single episode, new people reaching out, loving to hear different insight that you can bring us on the football program.
Oh, man, I'm excited to hear that. I don't get that same thing. I just occasionally will hear something from somebody that this is like they came across it or they're listening to it, but it's very occasionally. And you know what? It's been the most of those that I do hear from, the most have been from recruits, parents.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't call them recruits, assignees.
Sure.
Yeah. And we had our, we call it Summer Bridge. It's to bridge academically high school to college. We bring in our, the guys that we signed, last February. We're bringing them in for this fall. And this is an opportunity for us to bring them in early to this academic bridge program where they take, usually it's about 6 units per summer. It gets them ahead a little bit academically, and then obviously they get a chance to start training with our players. And we on Monday, or actually this past Sunday, we welcomed them to campus. They checked into the dorms. The parents came, and several of those parent groups said, "We're listening to the podcast."
Well, what better way to get to know you a little bit more? Because this is not my typical interview style, anyway. Most of the time, Coach, and I've had you on the whole show before. That's a football interview. It's a 15-minute, hey, what do you think about your quarterback? What do you think about your offensive line? Whatever. And it's kind of short and sweet. These episodes, we're typically going an hour, and we're talking about mixing in a little bit about your life, your philosophy, your views. One of the emails I had over the weekend was really like, I believe in this process. And I think he used the term like old school process or something. But I know that this is gonna work. It's gonna change things. So people really get an idea of what you're all about. If we wouldn't have done this podcast, I honestly today probably wouldn't know how much of an emphasis you put on the training and the workouts, and that has helped me learn a lot more about this program too. So that I think is fascinating. And yeah, if you're sending your kids here to play football, this is a pretty easy way to get to know their head football coach. That's going to be around these guys a lot more than parents throughout the years.
If it were only parents of the players, it would be well worth my while, my time.
Sure.
And I've told you before, it's worth my time because it's an exercise in kind of journaling for me. And I've stopped over the last 10 years or so, I've stopped actually kind of writing things down in that type of a journal. I don't know if I've lost time or lost interest in doing that. But I've always, since I was taught to do that as an English major coming through college, I've always known the power of that, of being able to reflect and then put something into an organized paragraph or sentence, and the way that that can help reflections and future planning in life. And this has become that for me. So it's very worthwhile for me. But I've told you, I think one of the number one differences, right, the philosophy of our program, the foundational aspect of our program is lift, right? If I had to put it in one word, we're lifting. But the biggest change from last year to this year, in my opinion, is going to be the relationships that I have and my coaches have with these players now, and a large probably just over half are guys that we recruited. We know their parents. We know what they come from. We know what they represent. And a year ago, I knew none of the parents at this time, almost none. It only a happenstance meeting or a parent came to the spring game and introduced themselves. And of course, you don't get a chance to know somebody very well. But part of the recruiting process is getting to know these parents and what they represent and what they stand for. And when a parent says, "Hey, coach, I'm turning them over to you,"
mm-hmm.
don't be nice to him. You know, like that gives me a lot of power and authority. And of course, we're going to be nice to them. We treat all of our guys like men. But just that encouragement from a parent allows me to sit a player down and say, "Hey, are you on track for what you and your parents have designed here as your next 4 or 5 years?" And that's incredibly empowering for me.
Well, and you know, that's the thing. These parents, when they're thinking about their kids going to this level, when you're playing football at UNC, you're taking this seriously. And the idea that they would come to you and say, "Hey, we trust you, but at the same time, we want you to get the most out of these guys. This is going to be whatever they end up doing after 4 or 5 years. This is going to be something that not a lot of people get to do, is to play Division I football." So helping them realize that and taking every moment, taking advantage of every single moment. And we've highlighted that throughout these podcasts too, maybe putting away some of those distractions so that your eyes are wide open through this process. And I think parents really appreciate that too.
You know, is what we're doing in terms of football and these guys and what we're asking them to do, is it important enough that if I make them attend my son's concert, that it's going to be on ESPN whether or not I did that question?
That
you know, no, it's not. At UNC, we're not going to get that type of national media attention if that's the litmus test for importance. But to these parents and to me and to our coaches and to our program, we've agreed this is important because we are doing it. And if we decide to go do a service project and we're doing some landscaping for somebody, okay, that becomes important because we are doing it. And the way we do this thing in football is likely to help set up habits that would transcend our experience in football and help us throughout life. And that's the agreement now that I feel is implied and discussed with every parent of every player that we've now been adding for the last 2+ years.
I was talking about you last week on one of my daily programs. It was in comparison to something Sean Payton had said for the Broncos. You know, he's come out this year and you know, in front of the media a lot more, I don't know, lighthearted. Seems like he's not as stressed. And he used a phrase. He said last year with, you know, the Russell Wilson thing and all that, just trying to figure this team out, he said last year felt more like peeing on all the trees. That's what he said. It felt like I was doing that more. This year, it feels like there's more of a plan. And I thought about you, because we've had those chats where last year, you're getting to know the guys. You even said it from the get-go. If you're here and you want to be here, we're going through this year. This is going to be our building, our base kind of building year, whatever. But did it feel like that at times? I mean, not maybe to put it quite the way Sean Payton did, but last year, you're just trying to figure this out. Now, as you've gone going through the full cycle, does it feel just a lot more comfortable? I mean, compare that.
I think so. I think if he's, kind of referring to the canine world, you know, I've got a dog, and I think and so the idea, right, is if another dog's been there, you mark your territory,
sure.
And maybe that's what he's talking about. Is you just
you never
at
really
every
know.
Turn when you first, I didn't hear the interview, but at every turn when you first take over a program. There are all these marks. There's even, you know, physical marks of signage that the previous coach left. And there's traditions and theories and philosophies and strategies. And all of those have to be, you know, changed, altered, or maybe adapted into our system. And so it does feel like that. I'm a little more into the horse world understanding, but it's the same thing. As you know, if there have been horses that, you know, that manured in an area, well, high likelihood that when a new horse comes in, they're going to manure in that area and say, "Well, this is my area now." Now you know that's how they do it.
This is one of the best things about this. You never know. We'll get into some football, but we might spend some time talking about livestock, horses, farming, agriculture. You name it. We'll get into a little bit of everything on this show.
Hey, speaking of 52 weeks a year, it's the goat heads right now. I got to get rid of some goat heads before they produce their nasty little thorns.
I remember those days.
Yeah.
They're just rough. Our big challenge, Coach, and while we're here, was the wasp situation. But this year hasn't been too bad. Any care to comment on that? What's the difference between this year and last year?
I've seen – so just the area that I'm at just hasn't had wasps of any significance. When I was living in Utah, we had a big wasp issue. I haven't seen it in this – even in this neighborhood. I haven't talked to my neighbors much about it. I did have the other day in the apple – got about six apple trees. And in that area, all of a sudden I was mowing and I happened to look over and shut it down immediately because there was a group of bees. It just looked like a mass of bees all stuck to each other hanging from this branch. And I was like, wow, I'm on a riding mower. This thing's loud. It's, you know, it's causing a lot of vibrations. Are these bees about to attack me? And then I started, you know, my first thought was, look at this big beehive. And then I'm like, well, no, that's not a hive. They're all stuck to each other. I think that's where I'm going to say something dumb. And hopefully somebody corrects me and sends it and we can talk about it next week. But I think it was, what is that when they swarmed the queen and the queen's looking for a new location? And so the next day they were all gone. But I was concerned, am I going to have to, you know, because my son, you know, he wouldn't know anything about the danger of bees. And so if he was wandering around out there, would he get too close or even grab them or something like that? But they were gone.
Oh, they're terrible. That last year, we had hives. We actually did have hives everywhere.
Wow.
And it was the neighbors surrounding us that wouldn't take care of their situation. So then it just kept getting worse around us.
Oh.
And we were in the middle of it. So that was always a fun conversation.
Yeah, maybe all my neighbors are keeping them away.
Guys, you guys got to take care of some of these because we're doing our part here. But it was nasty. But you know what? It's summertime. You expect a lot of that craziness. You never know what the weather's going to do. It changes every single day. Whether it's the wasp issue or the goat head issue,
yeah,
you're going to have it, and you're busting through it. And you have a little bit of time to do that now, as you said. You're busting it. But you know you've got to get a lot of stuff ready to go because here, it's June 19th. We're going to be into that full-on, hey, we have a game in a few weeks. You know, in a few weeks, we'll be talking about that on this podcast. So you got to get ahead of this stuff now.
My neighbor Stan the other day, he was kind of going, outlining all the things. And you know, he's become my friend, and I've talked about him on here
sure.
before. This is the guy that kind of shut me down when I first tried to introduce myself
one
to
of my
him
favorite
on
stories.
The side of the road. And now we're over there sitting on his lawn chairs in the shade yesterday and planning out, okay, what's coming up with some hay cuttings in the neighborhood because he cuts most of the hay in the neighborhood and bales it. And I just try to help him out whenever I can to learn and get the experience. And I just enjoy, you know, being around him. He's become a friend. But anyway, you know, he started to outline stuff that was moving into 2, 3, 4 weeks away. And I said, hey, remember now, the job that actually pays me, my real job is that's about to go from just training players to, you know, it's nonstop. It's 24/7. I won't be able to even think about anything other than taking care of my family and this team.
When does that start? What date is that? Or, you know, kind of an average of that?
Cool question. I hadn't anticipated that you would ask this, but I think the answer is like kind of enlightening. And I'm not sure if other coaches are like this, head coaches. But in the time that I've been a head coach, the 4th of July, we typically will travel for the 4th of July or do something or have people over. And it's like as soon as that travel or that party or whatever happens and it's done, like – the ideas, the planning, the logistics, everything just starts flowing through my mind. I have to actually keep my notes app almost open nonstop because I'm making to-do lists of sometimes just very small logistical things. I mean, we know our overall plan. We know what we're going to do on offense, defense. We've got our depth charts. Like I've got training camp planned out, but it's just small details of what's coming. Even as much as you know, administrative meetings that I need to make sure that our players have, Title IX training that I need to make sure that our players do, something logistical that comes to mind for our first game as far as the travel, when we want to arrive and what type of meal we want to have for the pregame meal. All those things, they just start coming rapidly. And it's there's an excitement there that I enjoy. Because things are coming to me almost as if somebody's kind of feeding it to me. It seems to come almost from the outside.
I was going to ask the stupid question. Is that, you know, does it ramp up because you're dealing with games? But you just said it's so many other things, too. You're mixing in the game. Sure, that's top priority is preparing for those matchups. But the logistics of travel, Title IX, all those other things that really ramp up once you get students basically back out on campus, too. So, once we hit July 4th, yeah. I've always timed that out, too, up here being in Greeley. I used to do city jobs up here and stuff, and I would always think, man, the summer feels like it's almost over when the Greeley Stampede is done. Because then you're thinking, oh, we've only got a couple of weeks left, and, you know, school's right around the corner. But here, a good barometer for me has been, well, the Greeley Stampede's over typically around the 4th of July. next up, big things. We're getting into football season.
That's interesting that you say that, and that could become kind of the next traditional for me. That the next traditional kind of milestone or stepping stone toward the season. I do remember seeing several of the players at the Stampede last year at the rodeos, and my daughter and I went to one of the concerts, and I saw players, and I can remember kind of like almost watching them, thinking, okay, are they behaving? Do they look like they're going to be going home on time tonight? We're starting training camp soon, So I think that could become my next milestone on the march toward camp.
Yeah. Are you going to try to get out to anything again this year? The rodeos again, the concerts, or are you able to go do that? What's that schedule situation?
Well,
starts next week.
Sure. Yeah. What it's like. With your son and my son, and so everything that I do like that, he's part of the decision criteria, right? So like he wouldn't enjoy something like that. I don't know if we could even like pull it off as far as bringing him, and he doesn't understand conceptually what a line is, mm-hmm. right? And so can't do lines. Doesn't understand what an assigned seat is. Doesn't understand. That somebody else's phone that they're holding is not his phone, to swipe and go running away with. So, yeah, like I can't bring him. And so that's the first thing is, okay, I love the Stampede. Love being out in the community and seeing people that I care about and our players, like I said. But how often do we want to leave our son at home with either a sitter or split up the family so that we can, somebody can be at home with him? And then there's the other part of, okay, well, we don't want him at home all the time, period. We want him to have an active lifestyle. What kind of things can we do? Going off the topic a little bit, we did have a successful outing to Chuck E. Cheese last week.
Oh, really?
We did.
Wow.
And it was like, so we pulled up. We pulled up and actually I went in and scouted it for, okay, how many people are there? is it like the more people that are there, the more chances that there's going to be an episode, right? And then the other flip side of that is we know that he loves to go into new places and explore. And he just walks around. He doesn't actually interact with any video games. He just walks around, listens to the sounds, and he's on the move nonstop. And then if we can get him to sit for a minute or two and get a few bites of food. But it all went great. And then the biggest fear is always, okay, what about getting him out of there? Are we going to have to usually we just stay and as long as it takes a half hour of, okay, but it's time to go. Mm-hmm. It's time to go. It's time to go. And we're just following him around. And then eventually if he's actually being disruptive to somebody, do we have to like kind of drag him out? And he's getting to the point where he's almost as tall as I am. He's 6'1", 6'2" now. He's 14 years old. He's really strong. And so that can look like, abuse, like you're dragging a kid out of there.
Sure.
Right. And so we don't want to put anybody in that situation where they're wondering if they should be calling the authorities mm-hmm. on us. And we don't want to put ourselves in that situation where we're embarrassed, but are trying to weigh the value of removing him from a situation where he's being disruptive versus giving him experiences in life. But here's the cool part. It all went so well.
That's
and when
awesome.
It was time to go, it's like, hey, bud, it's time to go now. We've been here an hour. And he just followed us right out. It was amazing.
I'm actually off this week, but this is Football 52. It doesn't sleep. This show does not, this podcast does not sleep. But as you and I've talked about, vacations are not really quote unquote vacations.
Yeah.
People are like, where are you going? What are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm just taking more of a break from my daily show and maybe mixing in a few meetings. Because even if I just want to lounge around at home for a week, my kid's in therapy and all that stuff throughout the weeks, helping him out. With his physical therapy, his music therapy, speech, all that stuff. So when he sees me there, sometimes in his head, he's like, wait, it's not Saturday. This does not seem right. So I actually just try to plan out a bunch of things. So for you and I, everything, is something as easy as saying, hey, are you thinking about going to a Greeley Stampede concert? Or are you taking a week off? What's that look like? Where are you going? Are you going anywhere fun? Those answers are always pretty loaded. It's not as simple as, yeah, we'll see. I might be. We'll be somewhere. You usually have a pretty significant follow up to that to that question.
Even close family that has seen my son has seen episodes. And understands the challenges and could probably describe them to other people. They still don't truly always appreciate
100%
the challenge of doing something like that. I've got a brother and a sister who are saying, hey, we should bring all the families and meet up and get an Airbnb out in Florida, you know, next spring. And I was like, well, wait, like, I can't, you know, the only thing we could do is drive. We couldn't get him on a plane, right? Like, what if he has an accident? He's not potty trained. What if he's got an accident on a plane? I can hardly go to the bathroom myself on a commercial plane. Those bathrooms are so small. How could I change him?
Oh yeah.
And then once we get there, right, that's a new place. It sounds like your son's really into the routines. We've talked about that.
Big routine.
And,
yeah.
And so a change of place can be exciting, but it can also be to the point excitement or stimulus where they're up for 4 days straight and there's no sleep, right? And they get into these modes. So, yeah, there's no way we could pull off something like that with his best interests in mind. And that's why we've tried to create that environment at home with the horses and the chickens. And now we're thinking about, what about a couple pygmy goats? Because goats are tough, but they love to interact and they'll kind of bother him and he can bother them. And maybe that's something that we can provide for him that's an experience and fun and yet in the safety of our home environment.
It's interesting to hear you say that too about family. I mean, obviously, love our families, love our, you know, our siblings, parents, whatever, but no matter what, like you said, 14 years, you'd think at some point everyone kind of understands and knows, okay, yeah, but we're not even going to ask because we know it. We get the same stuff. I mean, he's six, so you're telling me that it'll just keep coming, it sounds like. We'll get the same. Like, why don't you guys drive down here? And like my dad, I love him to death, but he's a bachelor now. He's in his own kind of pad, and it's not really a place where kids would want to go play, I would not imagine. And so my dad's still at that point where he's like, well, you're coming down for this. Why don't you just bring the kiddo down? You guys can stay for a week or for a couple of days. I'm like, well, the drive, you bring in the drive. That's going to be rough. That's 4 hours. And then once we get there, do you have a swing? Do you have all yeah. these different things that are going to be able to keep us busy? And again, those are just always fun conversations to have because it's like you have to do the whole thing over again as if it's the first time you're discussing the situation with them.
Chances are I've got 120 players every year on the roster. Chances are more than one of these 120 players are going to have a similar challenge. The rates of autism, and that's such a broad word. I hate to even use it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, when you're talking about kids like this and the challenges – because there's such a spectrum of autism. But I try to bring these boys around my son as much as possible, try to bring my son to things that would be appropriate where it wouldn't be too much of a distraction. And, you know, I've just kind of created it as one of my purposes to model for them, okay, you can make the sacrifices that you would have to make to keep one of these types of boys or children in your home and raise them. And it's going to be a big sacrifice. It's going to be a big lifestyle change. But you can also be a successful football coach, college head football coach. Mm-hmm. There's a ton that goes into that, right? And there might be some people that say, wow, how can you pull off all of that? And I don't want to back down. I want to be well-rounded. I want to be successful and good at my job. And I want to be a great father to my son and, of course, my other kids. But I feel like it's become part of my purpose. And somebody else might look into that more spiritually and say that's, you know, that somebody has put me in this position on purpose. And I don't know if I feel that way. It feels like, you know, I'm trying to make a bigger deal out of it than it is if I put it that way. I just know it's my reality, it's my challenge. And I know that if I can model successful behavior and enjoyment and not hide it from my players, that, you know, I change the diaper of a 14-year-old boy, you know, on a daily basis, or at least somebody in my family is on a daily basis, sometimes multiple daily basis. That might have been really embarrassing to me at age of 20 or 22 to think that I might be doing something like that. And now it's something that I take pride in, is taking good care of that boy.
I think the way you present everything going on. I mean, I remember from your first press conference, as soon as I heard Ed Lamb was coming to UNC, I'm, you know, doing research on you as much as I possibly can. And one of those videos pops up, you know, you talking about horse riding and what that means to your family and what that means to your son. And at that time, we had found out about our kiddo. We knew, but you never know. You're still you learn something every single day. But I was just so encouraged by just that video alone. So the fact that you're able to be out front with this, with your players, with your staff, with the surrounding community, is not only important because you want education, you want people to know, because there are a lot of folks, like you said, being diagnosed with autism, it's best if everyone just learns a little bit more about these unique situations that people can be in. But also, like you said, of that many players, they might know somebody. Maybe they already do. Or they might have children on the spectrum. And if they have those tools and things that they've learned from you on that side or anybody, it's just going to make everything a lot easier, I truly believe. So I admire the way you handle your business so much, Coach.
Likewise, I've enjoyed swapping the stories, and we have similarities with the challenges of our sons, but they're not the same, right?
Sure.
Like your son has some other abilities, quirks, disabilities, you know, however you would want to characterize it, right? It's really up to you and him, and how those are all shaped and characterized. And I've got a good friend here in town, Tyler Richardson, and he's probably has of the severely autistic boys that I've met, they're probably the most similarities between mm-hmm. his situation and mine in terms of just like this is there is no mistaking as soon as you see these two boys that there's something different. And it's a huge challenge, and it can change everything. Every day, you're basically saving their life all day long, right? The ability to even eat is not there, much less potty training, and you know,
yeah.
they can't survive without you.
I had one more side story. And again, this is the beautiful part of this. We promote this show as, hey, we're going to talk a lot of football. But one of the things you and I both talked about when we started this is with our family dynamics, this might be something that we want to sprinkle in. Throughout these programs, there was a gentleman, we were over at my mother and father-in-law's house, and a guy that used to work for my father-in-law stops by, and you know, he's rough, he's got rough hands and all this stuff, and he's got tattoos, and he's kind of one of those, you know, blue-collar, just mm-hmm. somewhat macho-type guys.
My kind of guy.
Yeah, good dude.
Except they can't find something that I'm willing to commit to for a tattoo yet. about a championship tattoo.
I'd be down for that. But he, you know, so you're just, he's talking and he's just kind of going on and on and on and on. And he's very brash. He'll just kind of say whatever's on his head. So he shook my hand. He goes, "You have soft hands. What do you do for a living?" And I said, "Not what you do." And then that ended that conversation. Because I'm in radio. I don't do a whole lot of hard work. My yard takes about 4 minutes to mow. But anyway, he's talking. And next thing you know, he looks over at our kiddo. And it was interesting because his demeanor kind of changed quickly. He looks at Gavin, and Gavin just kind of walks by him, and he looks at him and goes, "Hey, pay attention." And we are like, "Uh-oh, what's going to happen here? Is he trying to be a jerk here?" Mm. He says it quickly, and a light went on in his head, and he goes, "Oh, is he autistic?" We're like, "Yeah." And he goes, "Oh, they're special children." And that was kind of it. We saw this guy go from this rambling, rough and tough to instant. Like, "I'm going to test and see if this child, pay attention." So clearly he knows somebody. Mm-hmm. It was just, to me, it was kind of beautiful to see that realization and then how quickly it was just not really anything. You know, it wasn't like, "Wow, okay." It was just a realization, and he's an awesome kid, it seems like. I can kind of just tell. So that was a cool moment. And you get some of those. You get a lot of those sometimes.
For sure. You know, my wife and I grew up in the same hometown. We met in junior high. And back then, we had these kids in school, in our classes, these types of kids with these types of challenges. But we weren't taught anything about them. There wasn't the word autism that existed back then, at least not that I'm aware of. The first thing I remember being aware of was like watching Rain Man. And of course, this was well before I had my son or was married or anything like that. And then and that was even so different than from what I deal with, right? Like that's a what they call a savant, mm-hmm. right? And these amazing talents. And I still get that where somebody will say, "Oh, you have an autistic son. Like, what is his special talent?" We're still looking. You know, I'm not going to close the door, but we're still looking. Right now, we'd be happy with potty training if that could become a talent.
Yeah.
But my point is the awareness now, even for my daughter who's in the same high school as my son, and all of the interaction that let's call them typical students, those interactions that are actually built by the school and by the intensive autism program, from unified sports to just unified classrooms to just allowing these kids to be in the general population student body. And to me, it's magical. And that's where the idea and the structure for our camp this Thursday, the No Limits Camp, came into play. It's like, well, why are we having football camp? If football camp is only about recruiting, fine. But if we're going to say that football camp is also about spreading the love of the game, sharing our knowledge of the technical aspects of the game, the fundamentals of the game, why are we limiting it to those who play high school football? Why don't we have an all-abilities camp? And so that's what's going on Thursday
for us. Yeah, that's a great transition.
Most of our whole team, it's not mandatory, but most of our team will opt to be a one-on-one tutor for the duration of the camp and take one of these kids and try to learn. We teach them, okay, adapt their experience as close to football as you can. And if that's throwing water balloons, that's throwing water balloons. You know, if that's doing tackling and blocking, that's tackling and blocking. And we've got 18 different stations set up, and our players are trained to find what makes these kids tick and take them to the stations. The favorite station of overall, painting with a broad brush, the favorite station is running out the Bearhead Tunnel with Eddie Gonzalez announcing you. And Eddie, if they don't have a nickname, he assigns these kids a nickname. And some of these kids spend all day at that station. They just keep going through.
These are things and this is why I love this conversation and I love what this camp is all about. These are things that are going to stick with these kiddos for a long time. And even if they're at that point where it's hard for them to kind of fathom that memory or whatever, it will be there. And that's going to be something that lasts with these children for the rest of their lives. And I think it's such a powerful thing. And I always think about the education and information and informing people. When I was growing up, you'd always hear that, you know, we need to have these conversations. We need to educate people. I didn't know, but having a child on the spectrum, that education and things that you're doing is so appreciative when you see people, when they're watching Gavin and they study it and they're, oh, he's autistic. Cool. And then they'll start asking all these unique questions that I wouldn't have asked 20 years ago because I didn't know about this situation. So these camps and what you're doing on that daily basis, they're just so important, so crucial. And now your players are, somewhat growing in that education of how to work with some of these kiddos, and they're going to carry that with them for the rest of their life too.
It's something that I've heard them talk about after the camps and throughout the year. And some of them will say, "Hey, coach, when's that camp coming up again? We work with the special needs kids." And it's obviously it's dear to my heart. It's special to me because of my family situation. But the way that this camp comes off, the way that it's taken off from me saying it as an idea to Jen Lieber hearing about that, who's our special ed advisor on campus at UNC. She's in charge of recruiting and mentoring students through matriculation to be professionally qualified to go out and work these special ed programs. And then her getting Lori Couch involved and Lori just took the baton straight from me. And there were times this past year where our DFO, Eddie Gonzalez, Lori and Jen, they had a meeting and I got tied up in something and spaced the meeting. And then it's like, they give me this agenda, like, hey, here's what we discussed today. It moves. It's now moving without me and I'm trying to play catch up. I'm so appreciative to those three because they're going to pull off an amazing camp. We've got all kinds of other sports at UNC involved and students on campus in general. Some of the special ed students will be there Thursday. It's really going to be everything last year was, which was an amazing experience for me and hopefully a lot of the kids. And it's just doubled. It's growing exponentially.
Where can folks, and again, maybe it's not too, this will be released later this afternoon, but where can folks go? If they go to UNC's website, they can find information on the camp, even just to learn about what this is for maybe just future opportunities.
Yeah, that's right. And then Lori is involved with the Arc of Weld County. She's their development officer. She also was able to put a portal through there. And I think it's a little almost easier to find because Arc of Weld County is not as big as UNC overall. And so sometimes you get lost in trying to work through UNC athletics and find this specific camp. And of course, we have other camps that are for other purposes and even within football, but the Arc of Weld County was a pretty seamless, the fewest clicks
to
get to the No Limits camp and actually register and find out more information on.
Yeah, I love it. And I'll be excited to hear the recap from you next time we chat, too. So that'll be really good.
Yeah, me too. It might be a better recap to hear from some of the players.
Yeah.
You know, and through their eyes, which is part of the real magic for me, is what I was alluding to earlier of just – can I model being a father of one of these challenged kids for my players who have no idea? Even if I tell them, some of you could have a kid with some real significant physical or mental challenges someday. It just – you remember being that age. It doesn't compute, right?
No.
Like I think at that age, all I was concerned with is whether I was going to have a boy or a girl.
Yeah, that's
of
course, all.
Once you become a father, you're like – why did I care about that?
That
you
know? it's so funny too. Our guy Tanner, who just walked by moments ago, he announced Friday officially his beautiful wife is pregnant. And one of their poll questions was, is it going to be a boy or a girl? And in my mind's doing the exact same thing. I'm like, oh, it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
you know, there's so many other things that you're going to be thinking about. And if you do cross over some health stuff or whatever, then you think, okay, we got to get to that. We got to get to that point. So it is, it does change your perspective on pretty much everything, I would say. How do you think that your family dynamics has affected your coaching? You know, the way you view coaching in general?
Sure. Well, I can tell you, I had the three girls first. And I hesitate to get into something spiritual and say these three girls were sent here to us first because they paved the way. They built a home for this boy, and now he has four mothers, right? But then who's listening that says, well, I had my special needs boy first. You know, he was our first child, and we've had to deal with that. I guess there would be some advantages to that too. You're only worried about the one child at that point. And so I can't speak for others, but that was such a huge part of our dynamic is me kind of like, okay, what does it mean to have a daughter? I was a son. I know something about that. And the way these girls stay close to home, take care of the family, and have built all of our – my wife calls them traditions. She was a family education major, family science major, and she can cite for you the studies that say that your traditions, whatever they are, right? Monopoly or watching Survivor. If you do something as a family, your family is stronger, whatever that something is, church, et cetera. And so a lot of those have been shaped by our girls and what they're interested in and the way that we can interact with each other. But I can say just directly to your question as a coach, I would say the thing that is I don't have a son that's ever going to play football, right? And just to look at a picture of him and say and tell somebody, okay, he's 14. All right, here's a 6'2", 14-year-old. I mean, he's got veins all through his arms. I mean, he's like rippled, no fat on his body. He moves all day long. He looks like in a still photo, he looks like he would be a dominant football player or athlete of some type. And then you see him move around and you're like, oh, okay, there's something, you know, there's something different there.
Sure.
But you know, when I have a father of one of our players that comes on a little too strong about like playing time and I have a greater view of what this player's experience is going to mean to their life. And to me, the struggle for playing time and the awareness, the learned awareness that other kids are talented too, and that your struggle up this depth chart is part of your life training. I just have a different perspective than I would have had. And I'm not saying I'm going to lecture any father, right? But like how quickly, you know, I kind of dismiss any – like you hear things from dads, stuff like that. And I'm not specifically talking about any situation, of course. But you hear things from dads a lot of like, well, he'll be the hardest worker on your team. And you know, I don't say it really unless it just keeps coming out. But I don't say as a response, how do you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because how would somebody know that? How would you know that? You know your child, but you don't know these other children.
No.
And so I like to put all these dads in a room sometime and have that. Okay, you guys build the depth chart. Whatever you come out with, we're good. How long would that meeting last, right?
I'm amazed that at this level, you're still you get parents talking about playing time so much at this level, because to me it feels like this was a high school thing.
The reality is I don't, and I think a lot of it is just the I think, you know, for the guys that I recruited and that I get to know, I think these parents teach me things and I teach them things. And that's what I'm talking about, the strength of this team. I don't get that. But I have in the past. I know what it's like. And as I've become more of, you know, what we call in this business a transformational coach, not that I'm describing my skill level of that, but what I'm saying is, you know, my goal 100% is to use the sport of football, and we've got to win for me to be successful at this, but to use the sport of football as an opportunity to teach these men, these young men, life skills that are going to help them be better fathers, brothers, community members, et cetera. And it's critically important that I win. Winning to the football coach is like being published for the university professor. Like, I don't have credibility. I can't teach these things as well if we don't win. So I'm not saying that that's not important. What I'm saying is whether or not any particular player on my team becomes a starter or all conference or gets to the NFL, in relation to that goal, that's a very small piece. Now, if they have those abilities, then it's my job to get them to their highest aspiration, right? But for those that don't have it, and generally, you know, we're unaware of our own limitations, right? And so we're not imposing any limitations. But for those who are just not at the top of the depth chart, I'm not going to work any less hard for those guys as I am for the guys at the top of the depth chart.
Oh, I've been amazed with, and I know some of these to be parents, and they've been so supportive of this podcast. But they're the first ones to say, here's where I think he might end up, but I don't know. He's going to have to do this. I like that approach of, hey, he's got to do this. He has to learn this. He's got to hit this area. And then maybe he'll have a shot to earn his spot on this portion of the depth chart. So it sounds like you got a lot of realistic football parents out there too with what you're building at UNC.
I do, and I think we earn that as coaches. Like we have to earn that, is a better way to say it. We have to earn their trust, and I think we do that with the things we emphasize, our language and the way we treat these players. And when the parents get calls home, you know, they want to know that these boys are being looked after, taken care of, pushed in the right way. Nobody wants to be given anything at this level of football, and that's a really cool difference between what I was experiencing in my last few years at BYU as NIL. Those are almost guarantees, right? As a position coach, if you're going to go ask for this certain amount of money in order to lock up this recruit, well, you're basically implying that player is going to play right away. He's going to start. And what kind of dynamic does that lead to? And so there's a real opportunity for the programs or the levels right now that are saying, okay, we're going to shun that for a while. We're going to use our NIL opportunities different. Our NIL opportunities are for attendance in the weight room. We're dividing it up. You know, we're dividing it up equally amongst those who attend 100% of the time. That's how we're doing NIL. I'm not interested at all in elevating one of our players over another because of their current talent level. When I've said over and over, this is a developmental game. We got 19 to 22-year-olds. There's not a more developmental time in a kid's life. Testosterone is through the roof. Let's see who actually takes advantage of this opportunity, not who did the most push-ups when they were 15 and got a little jump on everybody else.
I love that motivation, too. And it just seems like from these conversations that guys are really buying into that. We talked a lot about running backs last week. We talked about a guy like Van Shield who's really maybe going to bring that personality trait, too, of hitting those weights hard and going after it and being motivated by that. On the running back side, before we break here, Coach, we definitely want to make sure we shout out Terrence Grant. We got to talk about new running back coach.
Thank you. Yes, new running back coach. And this is a cool – this. I hope this doesn't take us too far over. You're the one that keeps track of the time.
Yeah, the beauty of these podcasts, we can go forever. I mean, I don't know if there's a limit.
I guess one way to say it is it goes until somebody turns it off,
yeah,
right?
Last week when the ghost turned it off and it just stopped in the middle of it.
Yeah, but the listeners, the computer, and us, we all can end it whenever we want. So, Terrence worked for Paul Peterson at Utah Tech. He was on the staff there, Terrence Grant, and as a wide receiver coach. And before that, had a long high school career at a lot of different places and has really worked his way up. This is a self-made football coach who him and his family decided, I want to make a run at the college game. So he took all those skills that he has. And the high school coaches, they deal with some dynamics at the high school level that really translate well to college, but the college game is tough to get into. It doesn't pay very well. It's not a meritocracy. Once you have a family, now you're going to go into a low paying job generally. It's really difficult to crack into. So I commend him for doing that. But obviously I had this connection because he's working for a coach, Paul Peterson, who was the head coach at Utah Tech, who worked for me at Southern Utah. So high level of trust there with Paul, and was able to check that out. Mike Smith, when he left here this past offseason and went to San Jose State, Mike had worked with Terrence at Utah Tech. And when Mike left, he said, please take a look at Terrence. Mm. And Mike is an outstanding judge of character. And it was really difficult for our running backs when Mike left. Mike is really hard. He's militaristic in the way that he deals with his position group. And you would think that, especially in a running back room where there's a lot of egos, that guys would have said, hey, Coach Smith is gone. Mike's gone. Heck yeah. You know, like who's the next guy comes in? They almost to a man, every one of them found time to come and visit with me. Hey, Coach, who's next? Who you hiring? Who you thinking about? Okay. So I've got Terrence on my radar, but he's a wide receiver coach by trade, right? And then so we did some Zoom interviews with some really good candidates, very experienced wide receiver coaches and running back coaches. And we included the wide receivers on these interviews because we told them, look, we have a couple of wide receiver coaches by training on our list. We think they might be the best man for the job. The football part is easy. I've moved positions. I've changed things. You know, when Jim Harbaugh hired me, he actually hired me as defensive coordinator, which was my background. I'd worked all the positions on defense, and I'd been a defensive coordinator. He hired me as defensive coordinator. And when I showed up, he said, I think I've told you this story before, hey, you're going to get a chance to work under Dave Adolph. Hmm. And I had no idea who Dave Adolph was, right? And I was like, dude, you just completely screwed me. And within hours of meeting and listening to Dave, it was clear this guy's going to teach me a lot about football, and Jim Harbaugh just did me a favor. And in hindsight, it was the biggest favor. You know, it was a demotion, almost heartless, because that's the way Jim is. Like, hey, what's best for the team is best for you. Please, thank you. Take it or leave it. That's just Jim's personality, and I learned to love that about him, and it changed my career trajectory and my life. Dave Adolph was a mentor in life. Anyways, so I know that it's not about, you know, I just moved to special teams and became, you know, we were really good on special teams, and it helped me grow. So I know that it's not about your past experience at the position. It's who you are as a person, and then understanding the overall fundamentals of the game, which translate. It's blocking and tackling in the end. Okay, back to the story. So these receivers, they all listened to the interviews. They put in their time, but they said, hey, Coach, Riggs, Mike Rigel, the receiver coach we hired this past offseason,
yeah.
Riggs is our coach. We're not looking to swap. We're not, because that was part of the deal is, you know, Coach Rigel has worked with mostly running backs. Maybe we hire the best coach available, move that coach to receivers, and then move Coach Rigel to running backs where his experience is. And those receivers were like, he's changed our dynamic. He's changed our culture. He's changed our room. I've kind of alluded to this before. And those receivers were really adamant, like, hey, you do you, Coach, but this is what we want. We want to keep Coach Riggs. And Coach Riggs is really hard on the guys. And so that was an indication to me, okay, they're appreciating this. He has been super. I mean, he set players out of spring practices for being behind on an assignment. I mean, he's very in your face. He's been a head coach in the past. He knows about the culture piece of this, and he's just running with it and whipping that receiver room into shape, and they're appreciating it and responding to it. Anyway, I just thought that was a really good story.
Because it's fantastic. Yeah,
and then with the running back, so we got to that point where we're like, okay, if we do hire Coach Terrence, which we think might be the best person for this particular job, not that the other candidates weren't amazing and qualified, but if he's the best guy for this job, we're going to have to keep him at running backs because Coach Riggs is ingrained in that receiver room. And so we brought him back for a second round of interviews, and we actually made Coach Terrence interview with the running backs on running back play. And then we got a lot of good feedback from that, and that kind of gave us the green light. We wanted, with the timing of how some of these moves happened, we really wanted to include the players. And by timing, I just mean it's going to be their third coach. You know, they had Coach the previous coaching staff, and then they had, you know, our staff come in, and then all within less than 2 years, another coach, another position coach showing up.
How common is that to give your players that voice when it comes to their position coach? You really want them, you want their feedback and their insight, and you got a lot of it, and that's, sure. And this sounds like a real positive, but also talking to Coach Grant about, you know, just kind of an interview back and forth. How common is that?
Yeah, that, I think that's why there's really not a book on something as dynamic just, yeah. as a football program that would translate. Because to me, the immediate answer to that question is, okay, well, how much continuity have we had as a team? Like if me and my staff have been together for 4 or 5 years, we're winning championships, and I lose a coach, I'll hire another one without consulting anybody. I don't care to consult the coordinator hardly, much less the players, right? Like, hey, we're in a system. You're a cog in this system. We care about you as an individual, but I run the system, right? And so here's the next person that I'm going to plug into this system. Okay, in this case, you know, when you got, you know, Coach McCaffrey and then I'm and his staff, and then I come in and there's all kinds of change, and then I don't make the program any better. In fact, we have less wins than the year before. And then now I lose my running back coach. Okay. Well, this is like, we have to pull together here and cooperate and have a vision together moving forward. And I'm still guiding that, right? I'm still guiding that vision. That's my job. But, I really felt like it was important to include as many people as possible in the decision. And in the end, I'm going to make the decision and be unapologetic about it. There were some guys that you know, wanted to, that saw it a different way. But I think all I wanted was for their voice to know it was heard. And so for those guys that had different opinions, I approached each one of them individually and said, okay, I made a different decision than what you recommended. Here's why. And I hope you can get behind it and understand the reasons.
I would imagine, based on what I'm hearing over these weeks, you know, about your philosophy and about guys buying in, the respect factor probably goes up when you set them down and say, hey, I didn't go the area you got, the direction you guys, or maybe one of you wanted to go. Here's why. I would think that would maybe not right in that moment, but that's something where I would imagine the respect factor is starting to go up.
When you talk about respect, you know, my cheat code is being next to the guys and doing everything they do in the weight room and on the field when we run. And I think it's really hard for these guys to think that I'm not putting everything I've got into this. I might do it wrong. But when I explain something like that to them, hey, I hear you. Mm-hmm. I included you. I disagreed and I went this other direction. All right, I'll see you this afternoon at weights, where I'm literally squatting in the rack next to them, dropping weight. And now we've started doing some tumbling on the field, like gymnastics tumbling. And I can look the part in the lifting and the running. Like, you know, I mean, I'm certainly not the strongest or the fastest, right? But the guys are surprised when they first join the program. They're like, dude, coach is 50 and like, he's pretty strong.
He's bringing it
and all
yeah.
that, right? But hey, this tumbling, there's one guy that stands out as just completely inept, and that's me. I cannot get this tumbling down. I mean, my body is slamming into the turf. I've got scabs on my head and my back. Like, I cannot get this tumbling down.
What kind of tumbling, like, what are we doing here?
Like, somersaults, cartwheels.
Cartwheels,
yeah,
okay.
And the idea on this, there's some science to indicate that the body's proprioception, when you're hitting mm-hmm. the ground and getting back up, you're improving your proprioception, which is, you may know from our sons,
yeah,
right?
100%.
Yeah, like we're
it's a big word.
One of the real challenges for autistic kids is their awareness of their body in space, and that's what proprioception is. And so you can improve proprioception. There's also some science that would suggest that when you can predict with better accuracy when your head is going to hit the ground, right? Which it does in tumbling. You're, you know, just kind of glancing blows. That you're going to have less problems with concussions and your brain being and that one really makes sense to me because I did boxing. I've got an amateur boxing record. I don't know.
Absolutely have to go into that.
So I only have one amateur fight, and I won. I'll just get that out there right now.
Undefeated.
I've got a 1-0 record, dude. And I retired yeah. in amateur boxing. But you may know that, you know, in amateur boxing, like it, you're associated and licensed as an amateur, and you have a record that follows you around forever. And so I've got that record. But the important part that I'm bringing up is the training for that. I trained for like 6 months with a boxing professional, and and the whole team was there. This is when I was at Southern Utah, and they were watching, and that was the idea, is like, hey, I want to show these guys that you can do something, you know, something special. But anyway, what I learned with that under that training is that when guys get knocked out in boxing, it's because they didn't see the punch coming. When they see it coming, it really doesn't matter how hard it connects necessarily. When you see it coming or predict that it's coming, the body protects and relaxes and contracts in a way that allows you to absorb that punch, and then you keep going. You might be stunned, but you're not knocked out, right? And that is, to me, that type of training, that type of tumbling, that's what we're trying to teach these players, is kind of how your body, how your head, how your brain reacts when you're doing a cartwheel, a somersault, you're rolling sideways on the field. I'm probably making it sound like,
no,
out of a 2-hour workout,
yeah,
this is about 3 to 4 minutes. It's a very small part of what we do, but it's the part that I dread. And I'm like, I'm trying to look for signs as I'm watching Coach Hill, our strength coach, and we're going through it's part of our warm-up routine. We're going through our warm-up, and I'm like, okay, is it tumbling right now? Are we about to do a tumbling rip? Because it's so embarrassing, and I feel like I'm just so like, this is like, I can get under there, fail, drop a squat, fall down to the floor, drop it into the rack, and I don't feel like I'm near as likely to get injured as me and out there doing this tumbling. It's bad.
Well, and again, I think you know you've said this from day one, but whether you're amazing at it or you struggle with it, guys seeing their coach out there doing it, that to me is a special thing, because that is not common. There are coaches that do it, but it's not common. And to see that you're, even though you're like, I'm dreading this in a big way, this tumbling thing, but I'm gonna do it because, you know, they got to do it, so I'm gonna do it, and I absolutely love that.
Yeah, I mean, I went off on a tangent, but that was my point I was making, is like, these players might disagree with some of the decisions I'm making, but when you use the word respect, and I hate to use that in terms of like, oh, I want to show you that these players respect me, but I feel it. I feel it, and I feel it because I'm right there with them. I'm struggling. I feel it when the 4-year transfers come in, and they've had most of their 95% of their interaction has been with a position coach as far as the recruitment process. And we met, you know, me and the incoming player met maybe once, you know, and had a meeting. And so sometimes they're even unsure when they come back to campus, is this – okay, is that – yeah, that's Coach Lamb, right? And you can – hey, coach, like, you said you did this, but I didn't really know, like, you're down with us. Like, you're falling on the ground. You're running up the hills. You're in here doing all the lifting. Like, you're really doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. This is part of my deal. I don't think it's going to help us win. There's not a direct link to that, but it's going to help me to present the things I want to present later about how much you put into this.
Yeah. And I think when you said that at your opening press conference too, and immediately, I was like, oh, he's not blowing smoke. I could just tell. Because you hear sometimes coaches, they come out and they're, you know, we're going to do this, right? We're going to do this. But it's really them that's going to do that. But when you said, I'm going to be doing those things, that my brain latched onto that instantly. And I was like, okay, when I have him on my show next or for first time, I want to go back to that. Because you felt it. And I think some players might be skeptical because they'll hear coaches probably say that all the time. And maybe they showed up for one and it never really happened again, or maybe a month later. But then when they see it the first few times, it becomes a thing. And I think that, to me, I think that could be a difference. Like, there is a bond that football players with their coaches as a team that you guys have. And when you're in the trenches in those games, who knows, in the back of their mind, you know, hey, coach was sweating for us when we were lifting, and we're going to go out there and we're going to lay it on the field. Who knows when that might impact an actual game during a play?
We will be, relative to our opponents, bigger and stronger and tougher. And I don't think that I could pull that off without doing this way. Other coaches might be able to do that. This is how I do it. And that's what, you know, it's hard to promise, you know, victories of each game. It's hard to promise we're going to win a championship in this season or that season, right? Like, I know all that success is coming, the victories, the championships. I know all that's coming. I don't know the exact timeline. But what I can promise is Northern Colorado will be the biggest, most physical team in our conference. And the other teams will recognize that and give us that recognition. They'll understand that. They'll talk about it. You'll hear that soon.
Coach, this is another great episode. I know we didn't get to some of the things. I want to hit the team camp too, that you guys have late July, the team trip. that you're going to do. I want to get details on that. We'll go in more into that probably next week.
Sure.
And then recap that for sure, because I think that's another unique bonding opportunity. So this was a fun one. We were we talked a lot about life today, but we always get back to football. And I think, again, in the description of this podcast, we're running promos on the station for it. It's like, hey, we might talk about our family life. We might talk about football. We might talk about stories going on nationally, too. But the bottom line is we're getting a lot of great insight, and I have so much fun with the show.
I hope everybody appreciates the breadth that we're going into, right? Like, and if anybody has ideas on getting rid of goat heads, you know, get it to Brady, please. And then Brady texts me. I've got, the 2-4-D works marginally. It seems to take like two weeks to get to even change the color on them. Roundup, kind of the same thing. I'm going to try burning some out.
Burning, so. We used to be able to do that because I was out in the middle of nowhere. Didn't have to worry about it as much.
Yeah, and you know, this like kind of like a torch burning.
Yeah,
right?
Yep.
Yeah. So we'll see. I'm trying all things, but the goat heads are a little bit new to me. I haven't had that, and I got.
I wish I had an answer for you, but I remember as a farm kid growing up, that was like a constant source of just frustration. The dogs would have them all over the place, and I don't know that we ever really solved that mystery. So I don't know. Hopefully somebody can help us out.
They don't show up in the healthy established areas. It's just that anything that's disturbed, like, whoa, look at all those goat heads.
Well, you got work to do, Coach. It's the 19th of June. And I know, like you said, July 4th, you know, you start shifting gears a little bit. So you got a couple weeks left.
We do. Yep, we do. Yeah, I need to bring the goat. I want our team to be like goat heads. So I brought in a bunch of gravel in front of the barn where it was muddy in the past, and this gravel is like 6 inches thick, and it's got little fines in between it. It's basically concrete, and the goat heads are growing right through it.
They find
this
a way,
is the
man.
Toughest, most amazing plant there is. If we could be like goat heads, we're going to be an amazing football team.
I like that one. That one we get on the t-shirt. Maybe that's the tattoo, you know, the goat head thing. You know, I don't know. We'll find something.
It's so cool doing this with you, Brady, because, you know, like even my assistant coaches, guys that work for me, like I start to get off on a tangent or something like that. And they're like, hey, coach, let's move it away from goat heads. Nobody else is interested.
Well, that's the
problem. You're just here. Like, you just riff back and forth,
dude,
man. It's like.
That's the problem with it. I mean, because I could spend a significant amount of time just talking about mowing the lawn or the fact that I've become neighborhood gym around my neighborhood now. I joke that, you know, but there's just so many different things that happen on a daily basis that most people aren't really interested in.
Yeah.
But you find a way to make it interesting. And you're doing that, coach. Like I said, career alert, whenever you're done with football, you got a seat here.
With
I don't know if there's
help.
Money, but you got a seat here.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone else could bring it out of me. So I think we got to stay a team.
Coach, I appreciate you as always, my friend. And like I said, my weeks off are always different, so it's football 52. It's not football 51 or whatever. And I didn't want to even entertain the idea of skipping. And unlike you, I don't have as many backups that could come in. We've had a couple of assistant coaches coming in, but I'm thinking most of the guys are on the air at this point. And, you know, I want to make sure I get somebody in here that's somewhat educated about the football program to sit, whether it is with you or on that rare occasion when we have an assistant coach in. So it's an honor for me. I will be darned if I'm ever going to miss one of these bad boys.
Well, that's a good thing. I can't imagine getting on the other side of the table and trying to host it and facilitate it with a guest. Like I don't even know how you do something like that. That's an art form. I'm glad to be on this side of the table. Let's put it that way.
I grew up driving tractor on a farm, right? And I would just talk to myself in there. It's nice when you have somebody else on the other side where it's not just you the whole time filling dead air. So I appreciate it. Coach, we'll look forward to catching up with you next week. Good luck with the No Limits camp, of course. I can't wait to hear details about that. I'm sure everyone's going to have a wonderful time. It's an important thing for this community and for the football program. So thank you for that. And we'll look forward to getting your thoughts, you know, as far as the recap goes.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, recap next week.
All right, my friend. Coach, it's episode 20. We'll be back at it for episode 21 next week. It's football 52 with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb, me, and me, Brady Hull. We'll talk at you guys next week.